Justice Stacy is recused in this matter, and I apologize because I have a conflict, so I will be participating on the briefs, and Justice Wright will preside for purposes of the oral argument, but I will be participating on briefs. With that, thank you very much, and give me a moment to exit the courtroom.
Okay, with that announcement, you may proceed. Good morning.
Morning. You were at the end, you heard everybody leaving. May it please the court, I'm George Benton. I represent the appellant here, John Walter. And the key fact in this case is that Mr. Walter executed a deed covering about 8 acres of land in 1998. The deed conveyed this land to the appellee here, Doug and Deb Lau. And in that deed, he reserved minerals, and there was also language in the deed stating that no sale of the above described premises shall be consummated without giving at least 30 days written notice of the terms to grantor. Grantor shall have the right to buy the lot on the same terms. And of course, the grantor is my client, John Walter. Now, that was obviously a right of first refusal. In some states, it's called a preemption right. And Mr. Walter, this wasn't in the brief, but in his deposition, which was Exhibit 6, page 36 to 43, he explains why he kept that right of first refusal. He owned land next to this land, and he had a center pivot on that other land, and the center pivot could be extended over onto this land. He knew the Lows well. They were good friends. The land wasn't for sale, but he decided to sell it to them anyway because of the friendship. But he wanted the right to buy that land back if the Lows ever sold it, as this pivot situation. Now, so the issue is whether or not the Lows then sold this land about 15 years later to the other appellee's spores. Mr. Walter was given no notice of the sale. Found out later that they'd sold and they didn't honor the right of first refusal, so he brought the lawsuit to try to enforce the right of first refusal. So the issue is whether or not that right of first refusal is enforceable by Mr. Walter. Now then, the Nebraska Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals has addressed the nature of rights of first refusal. It has been stated that rights of first refusal in these cases are personal contract rights, and they can't be assigned by the person holding the right of first refusal. Now, the idea that these are personal contract rights can't be assigned leads to the logical extension of that, and this has been held by many of our other states in the United States, that since they are personal, they're not interested in real estate. And since they're not interested in real estate, they're not subject to the statute of frauds. They're not subject to the rule of perpetuities. And and of course, in this case, the district court held that this right of first refusal was not enforceable because it was subject to the statute of frauds. And since the Lows did not sign anywhere on this deed, that was void under the statute of frauds. First, I want to point out that Deb Lau, one of the appellees, did actually sign the 521 transfer statement. That really is kind of part of the deed. She acknowledges all the information in the deed is correct, basically, when she signs it. But in any event, the district judge didn't even mention the fact that 521 was signed. But since it's not an interest in real estate, and rather it's a personal contract, the real issue is whether or not there was a contract made between Walter and Lau back in 1998 when this transaction was done. And I think the facts are quite clear that there was a contract made then.
When was the deed executed?
1998.
Was that the time of the contract?
Yeah, I would say that's the time of the contract. Now,
there's no written contract, is that correct? So there's an oral contract that's alleged by Walters that there's going to be this right of first refusal, is that correct?
Right, of course, part of it's in writing because the right of first refusal is in writing, it's in the deed.
But that deed, that deed's only signed by the grantor, Walters.
But it is an oral, the oral part of it was the acceptance, but it was clearly accepted because...
Who recorded the warranty deed?
Well, I think, I'm not sure who recorded it, but Dad Lau did sign the 521 transfer statement, and I can't remember if the record's clear on who recorded it, but after it was recorded, it was sent to the Laus by Bryant Brooks. He was the attorney who was representing both sides.
Well, if you were a subsequent purchaser and you went to examine the title of the real estate that you were buying from the Laus, you would first look at the deed that the Laus got from your client.
That's right.
And having received, looking at that deed of record, you would see that the seller who gave the warranty deed reserved an interest in this particular property as a right of first refusal.
Right.
Isn't that a written evidence of the contract between the parties?
It certainly is. Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question about it. You know, I was just trying to analyze a little further that they accepted that, the terms of that right of first refusal by accepting the deed. The deed, Mr. Lau said he read the deed, he read all the documents at closing, and then they were mailed to him after closing, he read them again. And plus, their testimony was that this right of first refusal of this right that my client, Mr. Walter, had to buy the land was discussed at that time. They remember discussing that Walter would have the right to buy it. Now, they said but it, that arose from the deed of trust, and they point to this Article 11 in the deed of trust because Walter did finance, or financed them and took a deed of trust to secure what they owed. But the paragraph for Article 11 of the deed of trust was actually an acceleration clause that stated if the Lau sold, the debt would be accelerated. Nothing was stated in there about Walter having the right to buy it. The
does
only way they could
does the deed of trust talk about the option of first refusal?
No, it does not.
Does the deed of reconveyance or the deed from the trustee talk about the option?
No.
So the only document it does is the original warranty deed.
The original warranty deed. My point is...
I beg your pardon, and that deed is registered.
Oh, yes, it's recorded.
So...
98.
Okay, so in 2013, were one to examine the official records, would there be a cloud on this
property? Oh, yes, there would be. And I don't know if that's in the record, but the title insurance company listed over here today. So that, those happen.
Was like this issue of statute of frauds raised in any response in pleading or answer by the appellees?
No, it wasn't.
So it was brought up when?
I would say it was brought up at oral arguments in front of the district judges. Was, you know, the decision was made on summary judgment. And then, of course, it was brought up in the briefs. It was not brought up in the pleading.
So the first time that... Walters was made available of this defense was at the summary judgment motion. Right. And was it in the summary judgment motion, the written motion, or just in the oral argument?
Just in the oral argument and then the briefs that were done later.
So he did have a chance to respond to those?
I did have a chance to respond in my briefs. That's right.
Did you raise that before the trial judge, that that was not properly pled?
Yes.
In the briefs?
In the briefs, I briefed that, you know...
Are those briefs before us? Do we have those on the record?
No, I don't think normally you want district court briefs in the record.
Most likely not, but in these situations it may be helpful. But that determination has to be made by the parties.
I would like to reserve the rest of my time for you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please the court, counsel, Mr. Tonecker. I'm Randy Fair. I represent Douglas and Deborah Lau, the original people on the first deed transaction, Mr. Stahlnecker is also here, he represents Spores, but obviously all Mercers. On behalf of Mr. Stahlnecker, myself, I think I'd just point out initially, I think we'd be remiss not to request that if the court does decide to overturn the district court, there were other counterclaims and cross-claims that were dismissed as part of the court's determination regarding the motion for summary judgment in favor of the defendants. So I think the case that you demanded, actually should be.
Procedurally, are you dividing time with counsel? Are you making?
No, Mr. Stahlnecker indicates that I will use the time unless there's specific questions for him regarding that. But as it relates, I think if you look at the record itself, this was a pretty atypical real estate transaction initially. In 1998, Lowe's entered into a number of documents. They entered into a deed of trust, they entered into an easement agreement, they entered into an option of purchase. All of those were signed and executed by all the parties in a typical situation. The deed itself, however, was obviously not executed by the Lowe's.
Well, it never would be.
Correct. And so our position has always been, and this was raised actually in the depositions of respondents prior to the motion for summary judgment, that there was an issue that they never executed a document that right to the Walters to then execute or require them to give them an option.
Well, but property. When they took the property, they took the property as described by the grantor in the warranty deed. It would be wouldn't it be any different than if the grantor reserved all interests in minerals and other parties or other property relating to the surface minerals or something like that? Wouldn't they be taking that subject to those too?
I think that depends upon how you classify a right of first refusal. In this particular instance, the court found in its order that a right of first refusal is not saying as a reservation of right.
Was this a special warranty deed?
No, it just simply says it's a warranty deed. It just simply says joint tenancy warranty deed. If you listen to the depositions of the Lowe's, there's discussion where they believe that the only way they had any sort of obligation to inform Mr. Walters that the property was being sold was in paragraph number 11 of the trust deed, which was the acceleration clause, which essentially we're going to sell this property to another person, then you have to tell Mr. Walters, hey, Mr. Walters, and inform him of that.
Were the Lowe's represented by counsel during this transaction?
They were not. Mr. Brooks represented them. They agreed to use Mr. Brooks, but he did not. He had been Mr. Walters' attorney previously. Part of what's with in front of the court is actually notes from that meeting. Any of those records, Brooks, on his notes, doesn't have anything that mentions a right of first refusal part of the exhibits to the actual exhibit number 9, inside exhibit 7 on the motion for summary judgment.
So part of the contention is there was no agreement, no right, or no meeting of the minds by the parties.
Correct, and that's one of the court points out. It kind of blends the same thing. It says, well, we don't have a true contract, an agreement, a meeting of the minds, and as a result of that, the statute of frauds would be applicable.
Is this an interest in real estate, or is it something else?
I think that in this particular instance, the nature of this right of first refusal, though it is a personal right to Mr. Walters, is an interest in real estate. A right of first refusal, if I tell my nephew, I've got a 1957 Chevy, if I decide to sell it, I'm going to give you a right of first refusal to it. That's obviously an interest in a piece of property. While the nature of his right is personal to himself, I think that it's still an interest in property because you're achieving property through those actions.
And so your client certainly had, or the subsequent purchaser certainly had notice of the existence of that right via the real estate records.
Not really. That's what's interesting. In this case, well, when they exercise...
if it's an interest in real estate, I mean, that's why I think that's sort of a key question.
Sure. And I think the court found it was simply a contract, and I think Mr. Benton argues it's not an interest in real estate. I think the case law says a right of first refusal is a personal right, and when you have the option to purchase, then it develops into a true interest in real estate. I think regardless, we have an issue here where there's been no, if it's an interest in real estate, then I think it's not been signed, and the statute of frauds, 36105 and 36103 actually are applicable. So they're not in writing, signed by the person against whom they're trying to enforce the agreement. I think there's case law that always talks about someone may be aware that they have an obligation on the right of first refusal, but when they've refused to allow that exercising of that right, unless they've signed the document, it's not enforceable.
How can you not be aware of your right of first refusal when it's on the deed that was conveyed to you by the grantor?
As in this particular instance, the
because
deed,
the statute of fraud says I can ignore this reservation on the deed because it doesn't apply to me?
I think the evidence is they weren't aware of the reservation.
Well, they were present at closing, is that correct?
Well, they were present. The evidence is they were present in the room with Mr. Brooks. There's a discussion. Mr. Brooks says, don't worry about this. I'll get them to sign it. This is nothing you need to worry about. They leave. They go home. Realistically, Ms. Lau testifies that she's told by the attorney or by the court clerk, go down there and sign this Form 521. She walks down. She signs the front of the document in front of the court. There's an exhibit, a legal description attached to it. There's no evidence that the deed's attached because, of course, she doesn't prepare the document. It's prepared by the attorney, Brooks. She walks in. She signs it. She turns around. She walks out. Look at actually the number 11 on the Form 521. It actually says that the conveyance is in full. So the document she would sign and actually see talks about a full conveyance. She goes home.
Well, a full conveyance, but the deed could also be subject to easements, reservations, and restrictions of record.
Sure. And in this particular instance, when there's an easement reservation, they did it as a different document, filed with the full-blown document.
It's a conveyance of those rights that the grantor had. Is that right?
Such as the fact that you own property allows you to make a demand upon someone else if they tell you when the property is sold. That's a right that you convey to someone else after property is sold. I'm not sure it's strictly with any bundle of rights you have in property.
Counsel,
yes.
Listening to your argument here today, it sounds to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't believe any buyer has any responsibility that when they push that check across the table and the deed's pushed over to them, they have no responsibility to make sure that deed's properly drafted. It sounds like you're trying to put the blame on everyone else but your clients.
Well, I think they have a responsibility, but they also have a reliance on what's discussed and what they believe.
Well, wouldn't that be a separate cause of action against the seller? But isn't it in a real estate transaction, isn't it ultimately the burden on the buyer to make sure that deed what they bargained for?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Did this court decide it on the statute of frauds?
Yes.
The statute of frauds pled in any responsive pleadings?
No, but I think if you look at your previous case law, it wasn't pled, but it was discussed, and if you look at, I believe it's Big Crow versus City of Rushville, 654 Northwest 2nd 383, which is in my brief, I think that in order to claim with regard to affirmative defense, they have to have a showing of prejudice by the appellants. They're aware of it. That allows for actually up and even into a motion for summary judgment.
When were they aware of it? Were they aware of it at the time of the motion for summary judgment?
Yes.
Were they aware of it before then?
Before, but I don't think that's in the record.
Okay. Is there any motions to amend the response and pleadings?
No. Those would have taken place after because motion for summary judgment, because we assume, quite honestly, that it didn't get resolved at the motion for summary judgment. We would turn around and then have a motion to amend our pleadings. I think the case law is clear that you have the right to amend pleadings time of the trial, there's not any prejudice to plaintiffs.
So the court considered a defense that wasn't pled, but the argument is there was no prejudice to the Walters. Is that correct?
Correct. I think the case law allows for that to be
Well, I don't think, how could you say there's no prejudice when the court decided the case on that basis?
I think he has to show the prejudice at the time that he's surprised. The fact that he loses doesn't mean that he was prejudiced by finding out about it at the time. He found out about it. He knew about it. he addresses it not only in his theft to the trial court, but also addresses it in the brief.
So the fact that he got to brief, had an opportunity to brief that issue, removes the prejudice. Is that the position?
Correct, because he's aware of it, it's in the depositions, it's discussed, was asked about, no one else signed any. Deposing the plaintiffs.
But does that set forth a defense of statute of frauds? Was that statute ever cited?
I don't think it was cited to, it wasn't mentioned to the person being deposed.
Haven't
it was
we
discussed
said,
among attorneys, but that's not the record.
And we said that you have to set forth a specific statutory authority for the defense, if there is one?
Correct, but I think the case law says I can do so orally at the summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any time for rebuttal? All right. Okay. You have a minute and 17 seconds.
Yeah, I thought I'd just mention that Judge Castle, you wrote the Jones v. Stare decision, and in that case, that's where you stated that basically a first right of refusal can't be assigned because it's a personal right. And in that case, you said since where at first refusal had been exercised, it turned into an option, and that could be assigned. And the logical extension of that case is, since it is a personal right, it's not an interest in real estate, so that kind of answers the question before. But it was in the deed, though, and it was recorded, so they did have notice of it.
I just hoped I was right at the time.
Yeah, well, I think you were.
What's the Court of Appeals say in their Messersmith decision?
Messersmith, as I recall, it was unsigned. The right of first refusal discussed or something.
It was an oral agreement, perhaps.
Yeah, and there was nothing. There wasn't anything in a deed or anything there. Nothing at all.
Did the Court of Appeals say at that point any sale of land is involving statute of frauds?
You know, I can't recall what that case said. That was an unpublished Court of Appeals decision, if I remember right.
I didn't want to catch you off guard with that, but yeah. I know you talked about it a little bit at the time of the motion for summary judgment.
Yeah, I did. So, but anyway, no more questions. I'll sit down.
Okay, thank you. That concludes arguments for today, and the parties are excused, and we are adjourned.